Is it just me, or are the skills of writing and selling on opposite sides of the spectrum? Writing feels private, intimate, honest. Selling? Well, that's loud, aggressive, and, well, dishonest. So why is Christine Gomolka, a freelance writer with an English literature major, so good at selling?
When I first started out in sales, the total deal size was like $4,000. So I'd get paid off a percentage of that. And then by the time I was selling IT and software, these deals were hundreds of thousands of dollars of recurring revenue. So I got to the point where I was in that type of sales, making six figures before the age of 30, which was like my big goal.
Welcome to B2B Craftworks, a podcast about business writing. In this season, we're exploring power in B2B writing and how learning more about marketing and taking more responsibility for the marketing side of your writing can help you become a better writer and build a more powerful writing career. Today, we're talking to Christine Gomolka, an English lit major turned B2B technology salesperson turned freelance writer. And this is the complicated story of how sales gave her power, then took it away, and then gave it back as she built her freelance writing business. Six-figure sales wasn't exactly the writing track she'd signed up for in college. No, that wasn't part of the plan at all.
I went to college and majored in English lit, and I knew writing was my track. I loved reading and writing, but the only program they actually offered for writers was publishing, because that was the way it was positioned. It was, you're either going to be a poetry major or you want to go to the business side, which is publishing. And as soon as we got into the grammar and memorizing grammar rules, I just said, wow, this is not for me. I love actually writing.
So how does a writer end up in technology sales? Someone who loves to put ideas into words and see those ideas have an impact on the world. Oh, wait, that's exactly what selling is.
I took a turn and basically became like that stereotypical lost liberal arts major of, I'm graduating and I have hundreds of thousand dollar degree and all this debt, but no actual trajectory. That's how I got scooped into sales, because they love people who can communicate but really don't know what they want to do. It's a very good entry level job for recent graduates. And if you're able to talk on the phone, you pretty much get in the door.
Very quickly, Christine realized that sales wasn't what she thought it was. It wasn't a pushy, aggressive conversation, unless you made it that way.
This is an oversimplification, but there's kind of two different personalities in sales. There's somebody who is going to really listen to the customer and be a consultative seller and really try to provide that customer service aspect. And then there's another type of salesperson that is what we would call like a closer. They get on the phone, they talk the person in circles, and before they even realize what's going on, they're giving their credit card information over. And this is just a personality type. It's like, it's a schmoozer. And I'm not even saying it as a negative thing. I've just worked with so many of those types where I look at them and I'm like, wow, that is a skill where you just capture people and get them to do what you want to do. So I, as the kind of like English major person who loves to be in a room reading silently, I wasn't ever going to be that type.
As it turns out, that worked out just fine for Christine, because her strengths as a communicator was all that she needed to be a successful salesperson.
What I had going for me was being an empathetic listener, number one, but number two, just knowing that I had to work a little bit harder than the person next to me who was a schmoozer. So sales is a numbers game at the end of the day. And if you have the type of personality that I have, it's going to require probably more output, meaning I would have to make twice as many calls as the person next to me to get the same result that they got only making 50% of the calls.
But believe it or not, it's not all sunshine and roses in sales. Many of the stereotypes are true.
You're either going to sink or swim, and you're going to last for 6 months to a year and see if you're really cut out for it, or you're going to decide very quickly, wow, I'll never do that again. And you speak to a lot of people who say, I had a job in sales once, and it's because they did it and they never wanted to do it again. And they were so motivated to never sell again. Sitting in a room with a headset on, staring at a computer screen and making 100 outbound calls, it did feel like, okay, this is not what I envisioned for myself, but here I am. I wanted to make money. I was living in New York City and I had to survive. So I just figured, okay, this is what I'm going to do for the time being, and I'll figure the rest out later.
Like most writers who aspire to live a life fully lived, Christine just wasn't satisfied with that life. The income was a huge accomplishment. But what is money if it leaves you feeling powerless?
I was like, it would be stupid to walk away from this if I'm doing well and I'm achieving these goals, especially financially. Why wouldn't I take advantage of it, even though I was miserable and dying inside? But, you know, gotta get that money. And that was when I decided to leave and quit altogether, ironically.
Money is power in a lot of situations, but money can also create golden handcuffs that strip you of your power.
I got to a point where I realized that I was sick of being, how do I put this? I didn't like being the vulnerable one, the one who is always in the position of asking.
It puts you in a situation where you have to keep other people happy in order to keep your power. And that's not power at all.
I would go into a customer's office, and as a salesperson, you're kind of already beneath the customer in a way. And then you add in other factors, different positions of power. I felt as though if I didn't want to deal with somebody, or if somebody was making me feel uncomfortable, I didn't have a choice on whether or not I could work with that person, because I needed to make the sale.
So Christine had to decide who she was going to give power to in her professional life, the customer she was selling to or herself.
Of course, at the end of the day, it's always my choice. But when you have a career trajectory in front of you and you know that you need to do X to hit a certain goal, it's very hard to just be like, you know what? That person was really creepy, so I'm never going to go back there again. You feel pressure to keep putting yourself in uncomfortable situations with people who take advantage of their status or their, you know, level of power.
Everything got more and more stressful. It reached a boiling point, and it was time to go.
So I had faced enough of those uncomfortable situations to the point where I just said, nothing is worth this. I would rather make half of my income and do something that doesn't involve this level of creepiness, and just I'll live off 50% of my income, which was actually huge for me because I had spent so much time putting money at the focus of my goals. Mm-hmm. And because I didn't come from a wealthy background, and because I started at a deficit, I mean, I was in a bunch of student loan debt.
And that's when Christine started to piece it together. Writing is communication. Sales is communication. She was good at both. Couldn't that be a business?
I think writers are positioned as artists, and you just think, I'm either going to be a starving artist or I'm going to go into the business world. And I didn't know what copywriting was at that time. I had that mindset. It's either you're going to be a writer. I just had this vision of, okay, I'm going to have to work a real job for the rest of my life, and I'll just do writing as a hobby and something that is for me personally. And that's actually really sad, because you, now that I'm doing this, I realize you can get a job writing and actually make good money.
So a B2B technology salesperson was about to sell some marketing writing. How would that work?
Writing isn't this high pressure, let me get your credit card number on the phone. It's a matter of listening to what the customer wants and actually determining if you as a writer and the customer, the marketing person, whether there's actually a synergy there and whether you will be a fit. It's not trying to really even sell the customer. You have to be able to talk about what your strengths are and how you will provide value to your potential client, but it's not necessarily this big trying to convince them.
Because as it turns out, it's not about you.
Sales in writing seems like it's about selling, but really it's about helping and offering value. And it seems like it's about getting clients, but it's really about forming a business relationship or a partnership.
Christine started applying her sales knowledge to her writing career, and it worked.
Sales was actually really hard for me on a spiritual level because I could understand why somebody maybe didn't want to purchase something, but I have to keep pushing. So empathy can hold you back in sales. But from a writing perspective, it's really valuable because if you can put yourself in the shoes of that person, you can speak to them directly and you can say the things that they would want to hear.
But just because Christine knew how to sell doesn't mean it took off for her right away. She still got a no all the time. But the difference is she had that sales background to push through it.
Being in sales is understanding that actually you're going to get most of the time a no. And so it's good training for life in general to be able to handle rejection. And in the type of sales environment I entered into as a post-college grad, it was very heavy, high call volume. There was hang-ups, there was cursing. That's probably not going to happen for copywriters that are pitching people. The rejection that comes when I do cold outreach for copywriting is mostly just silence. You're not going to get somebody who's like, don't ever call me again. At the most, you'll get a take me off your list or I'm not interested, which I don't know if I'm just hardened, but to me, that's nothing at this point. It's not personal. They're just not looking for a writer at that moment.
It sounds simple, right? Just don't take it personally. Harder said than done. And Christine felt that too.
In the beginning with sales, you take everything personally. And even when I started doing cold outreach for copywriting, it was a little bit sensitive as well because I felt like a fraud. I felt a little bit of imposter syndrome. I was going from pitching a different company's product that was separate from me to now pitching my own ability. So I think there's a little bit of vulnerability there and a little bit of the tendency to take it personally.
There were a few other lessons she learned along the way. The first one is to start thinking about the people. Sales and sales writing always starts with the people.
At one of my past companies, we would actually create buyer personas like as if you're looking at their LinkedIn profile or their dating profile. It's like not only knowing their company and their job role, it's understanding who they report to, even understanding what type of person they are, what do they do when they're outside of work. You want to really understand who you're selling to so you can speak to them. And most companies have a vague idea of their ideal customer profile or buyer persona. And that's a big issue.
Because targeted messages are the only ones that work in B2B and B2C.
It's like if you were a lawyer and you were running your business and you had X, Y, and Z client and you had this issue, this issue, this issue, and then the looming uncertainty of the economy and the new restrictions and the new laws, you have to really get into the mind of that lawyer and what they could potentially be struggling with in order to speak to them. And that's what I try to do with copywriting is what is this person who's reading this article? Why are they coming to the article? What are they looking for? What experiences do they have that I can speak to? If we think that somebody actually has insight into our problems, we go for it because people walk around this earth thinking, I have this issue and it's completely unique to me and nobody gets it. So the good marketing out there speaks to people's problems and provides a solution.
The second tip Christine has is to get comfortable accepting feedback, even when it's not positive.
I actually had one guy say to me in the very beginning, and I actually have this screenshot on my desktop to this day because I kind of use it as motivation, but he said, I took a look at your portfolio and yeah, the writing, it's not going to be a fit. And it was like, it was really cold. And I just said, hey, like, would you mind telling me why? Because I would really appreciate the feedback at this point. I'm pretty early on. He got back to me and he was like, well, he really tore my writing apart. And it took me like 24 hours to like gain my composure because I was like, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. Like the samples on my site must be horrible. But it actually I went and I edited my samples and I found some writing software that I wasn't even aware was available at that time. I didn't even know about Grammarly and Hemingway at that point. So there were things in my writing, there was sentences that were too long, and I was new. Once your ego recovers from that blowback, you really can implement harsh criticism. And I'm thankful for that guy for being blunt with me, because even though it hurt, it did make me better.
Christine also recommends pre-screening clients, even when you're first starting out.
B2B sales seems like it's about pitching the client, but it's really about seeing if you and the client are actually a fit for one another. In the beginning, I had these interactions with marketing people, marketing managers, marketing directors, and in those first few interactions, those emails, you can tell a lot about what they're going to be like to work for. Even though in the beginning I was so, I don't want to say desperate, but I was so hungry for clients because I wanted to get my business off the ground. I had no backup income. I went all in on this, right? So I wanted to kind of make every customer be a fit for me.
If you don't pre-screen and set standards, you'll go back to having those power struggles you were trying to avoid in the first place. And that is no good.
When they come at you with unrealistic expectations, asking for free work, asking even just, hey, pitch me some ideas, what do you think? You can gauge the level of difficulty of what they'll be like to work for. It was important for me to hone in on that and say, you know what? If this doesn't work out, I'm okay with it, because this doesn't seem like the best fit for me work style wise. So it's okay for writers to be discerning about who they want to work with. There's always going to be someone else out there to give you more business. And that's like another sales principle as well, is you take the rejection and then you move on, because there's always another sale out there. And I don't want to talk about people as if they're just sales, but this is a relationship you enter into when you write for someone. And you want to make sure that you're at least setting yourself up for the best relationship you could possibly have, and not just yield to their personality.
Finally, Christine's last tip is a true sales mantra: always follow up.
And a lot of the times writers are like, should I take this personally? They haven't answered me. No, they're just really freaking busy. So keep pestering them and eventually they'll answer. They just have a million things on their plate. It's really important for writers to keep reaching out to their clients, even at the chance of being perceived as annoying. The majority of prospective clients and clients have said, thank you for your persistence. I keep hearing that over and over again. That's really the mindset that they have. It's not, hey, please stop reaching out to me. Like, they'll tell you, hey, I'm not going to, this probably won't happen until June. Reach out to me then. You'll most likely get that type of pushback. But if they're just not answering, you got to set a reminder in your calendar and say, it's been 5 days. Send a follow-up email.
That's Christine's secret strength: sales as a writing power. And that's why any writer can choose to make that strength too, even if you don't like the idea of selling that you currently have.
What copywriting really is salesmanship in print. It's understanding what the pain points are and being able to speak directly to that. As salespeople, we're really in touch with what the customer's pain points are, because we're listening to them actually speak them to us verbally.
When you can tap into what your clients' customers are worried about, you become an incredibly valuable asset for that client.
When you get to hear the actual end customer speak about their pain points, that's really powerful. That actually offers a benefit that goes beyond what the marketers usually can comprehend. Marketing people don't have that customer interaction enough to really thoroughly understand pain points. That's why they need to really collaborate with the sales team. There's this divide between marketing and sales. They really need to be collaborating, because marketers need to understand what messages to push that's actually going to resonate with the end audience.
When most of us think about powerful people, we assume they're people who don't have flaws or rough patches, or who catalog those rough patches behind them and overcame them in some super permanent way. But in reality, the rough patches are what give us the strength to pave our own path.
It's such a hard line to walk. But all I know is that it's good that it happened this way because it's really what has kept me going.
When we embrace what we've gone through, we embrace our own power, and we can use it to motivate us to keep going, even when there are parts of the work that we don't want to do.
Writers are going to hate the sales aspect. They're going to hate following up. They're going to hate pestering people and doing cold outreach. But if you have a strong why, that's what will keep you going. Whatever the reason why that you took that jump, you really have to tap into it and hold on to that, whether it's that you had an abusive boss or you never had time to spend with your kids. And for me, I look back at how painful those experiences were, and that's what kept me going along my path, because I said, okay, I'm never going to go back to being in that vulnerable position. So I have to take control and power through just so that I don't have to go do that again.
Did you ever think of your ability to sell as a source of power? If not, it's time to do that. Because when you can sell, by which I mean have conversations about whether or not you can help people get what they want, you have the power to set the course for your career. Thank you for listening. If you like this story and want to hear more like it, subscribe. The next episode comes out in 2 weeks, and we're talking with freelance marketing consultant Jesse Butts about power and position, why marketing managers go in-house or freelance when they hire writers, and why that matters. If you want to hear more from Christine as she builds out her offerings for other writers, follow her at christinegomolka.com/newsletter. And if you want to hear more from the B2B Writing Institute, head to b2bwritinginstitute.com to find out how to enroll in our free foundations course or get on the weekly newsletter for Friday.